Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to announce the premiere of Kamwast Speaks. Greetings and welcome, Kamwast. How are you, my friend?
I am wonderful. Life, health, and prosperity all, and blessed Imbolc, or Candlemas, if you will. And thank you, Hercules, for this opportunity.
My pleasure, my friend. I'm looking forward to your visions for the future of this show.
As am I. There's a lot we can accomplish, and I'm looking forward to all participation from my audience and, of course, from all the different groups that we belong with both the Covens of Long Island, New Jersey, and the Covens of New York City, and all of the pagan groups that I am aligned with and that you're aligned with. I am excited beyond mortal comprehension, beyond divine comprehension. This is an amazing event. I want to tell you all something first and foremost. This is my 53rd Imbolc. I was initiated in 1970 in a very odd, very, very magical circle, and brought into the group as a neophyte, which is a new member. I was completely unknown to these things. I was about 13 years old. I had no idea what was happening to my life. I was all excited. We had had poltergeist activity in the house. My mother's mother made noises about magic, witchcraft. She didn't tell me anything that she knew, neither did my father's father, who was an old wizard like I am now. My grandfather had a pot on the top of a stove, and on that, in there was all kinds of herbs and strange things. He never let anybody touch this thing. It was a white enamel and lacquer pot made of steel and covered over, like a stove is. It's got that, overly heat-resistant enamel. And the other pot that he had on the stove was for his iced tea. He was as obsessed with his iced tea as I am with my iced coffee. And if you saw me right now, I have a big thing of Dunkin' Donuts cold brew iced coffee. Unlike my grandfather, I didn't make that. I ran to Chestnut Street here in Newark, New Jersey. But like my grandfather, I do use herbal magic. I use candle magic. I use what is called sympathetic magic. I create and empower in Ushabtis, which are little spirit dolls or spirit statues, which will help people aid in their ritual workings. How am I doing so far, Hercules? Huh?
You're doing great. You're off and running.
I sure am. Now, I want to start off with a prayer. So I want everybody to close your eyes. I will ring my ritual bell. I do five times for the points of a pentacle, and also earth, water, air, fire, spirit, and love. And those are the energies I wish to bring into the world, the energies of spirit and love, and in the elements of earth, water, air, and fire. In the name of the High Presence, I summon this energy forth. I ask that all those participating and all those out there who wish to will be imbued with prosperity, long life, love, and good health. Ankh, Ujat, Saneb, and Ab. Ab is heart and also love in ancient Egyptian. In the beginning of my spiritual awakening as a young man, I had no energy, I had no understanding of these things, and they came to me by a wonderful teacher whose name is Daniel. And he came into my life as a friend, and then much, much, much more as a very divine, magical teacher, and he still is. We learned everything together. And then later, quite in secret, my aunt, Babe, who was also Henriette, started to teach me things. She was my grandfather's sister, and in my family's grove, the high priestess. Now, I've not revealed this to anyone until this night. Henriette gave me things in French that I did not ever to anyone. And she taught me things from her own personal book of shadows. In the other group that I belonged to on Long Island, they were more Celtic, Germanic, Welsh, Norse, and Druidic. And when they came time to ask me, Michael, and then my name Comwes later, what gods and goddesses, what is your mother goddess? Name her for us. They were expecting Sheridan or Gaia or Freya. And I said, Isis. And they said, who? What? Isis, the Egyptian? I said, I am Egypt. Isis came to me in 1970 and wrapped her golden wings around me and said, I am your mother. I choose you. And it was a physical manifestation. It wasn't, I opened my eyes and closed my eyes many, many times, and standing in front of me and then behind me was a woman clad in gold, and she had feathers of gold coming from her back and extending out behind her arms. She wore on her head a golden crown. First layer was of snakes, of cobras with circles of sun on their heads. And it was a vulture crown like the Queen Nefertari wore in pictures. And there was a big, big disc of light between two big horns of bullhorns, cow horns. And in the middle of that were a symbols of a stairs, a steps. And she said, I am Azet, I am Auset, I am Isis to you and the Greeks. I said, Isis? I said, I've never heard the word Aset before. I didn't know that was her name. And she said, you shall call me Aset, Auset, I am Isis, but I am Aset. And she said, and your other lord shall be Asar Heru Ra. And I said, those are three gods? And she said, yes, that is Osiris, Horus, and Ra. And she said those things to me in those words, because those are the words I would understand. I had not yet studied Egyptology. I was probably 11 or 12 years old, almost 13. I had started reading things about, as I had mentioned many, many times, about Queen Cleopatra the VII.
Yes.
I started to read things. I didn't understand hieroglyph yet, and I knew that she was a Greek, which would make you happy, Hercules.
Of course.
But, yeah, well, she was a Macedonian Greek. Right. She had her grandmother was Eleni from Athens, and her father, her grandfather, was a Ptolemy, and he was Greek, but he was Greek and Egyptian. They just said recently that they discovered that the Egyptians had Greek, Persian, Arabic, all the North African tribes within them, and that they were not sub-Saharan African until the 25th dynasty. I don't want to get into that right now. I want to keep working with this ritual.
Mm-hmm.
A little long story short, the beginnings of the ritual that I was taught were written by Raymond Buckland, the Gardnerian and the great, great high priest, who I had the pleasure of meeting at Magical Child in about 1975. And the ritual goes like this, and so everyone please focus. Water and earth where thou art cast, no spell nor adverse purpose last, but not in complete accord with we, but as our will, so must it be. And while this is going on, members of my group would be sprinkling water and earth, aspergering the water and the earth onto the altar and around the circle, and a bell would ring three times. other priests and priestesses will rise, and they will say, fire and air this charge I lay. No phantom in our presence stay, but not in complete accord with we, but as our will, so must it be. And again, incense are lit, and candles are lit. Now, this is Imbala, candle mass. So upon my altar appeared two perfectly virgin candles. One would be blue for health. Red would be the other for passion. In the center of them would be white candles, surrounded by a ring of smaller white candles around the entire altar. And it would be the duty of those in the north, south, east, and west of the altar to light those candles in the name of the lady or lord of the north, south, east, and west. And I will name them for you. In the north, in the land of the cold and also the land of the winds, you have Nis, the goddess, the Netera, the goddess of my people, who is the goddess of the weaver of time, which I've often spoke of. And her candle would be lit. And also that of Duabutef, who is the keeper also of different parts of the viscera in a mummification ritual. But in this case, he stands as a guardian. We move to the east, where the sun shall rise. And also where all knowledge begins, according to all, that we began in the east, eastward stand I. And you'll have warmth, and you will have, however, also, we began in the primeval matter of primeval matter, the primeval waters, the waters of Nun. So from the water shall rise up, and there shall be the goddess Nephthys, who is also the goddess of secrets and mystery. And she will rise, and also will come with her Lord Hapi. He is the Nile, but also the son of Horus, whose name is Hapi as well. He has a baboon face like his uncle Ptah. And he is wisdom like his uncle Ptah. Now you shall go into the south, which is fire. And fire from within, your passion, and also anger. And it's ruled by Selket. Selket is a warrior goddess. She is the goddess, if you'll look in the hieroglyphs, the goddess who wears a scorpion on her head. And because the scorpion sting burns before it kills, she is a goddess, the keeper of fire. And she is in the south, the warmth. You also have with her Imset, who looks kind of like Osiris, because he is one of the four sons of Horus, but he is representative of a protective of Osiris. And he also has the fire and the passion. In his hands, he often is seen holding a flame. Now we go into the west, into the dark. And you have Isis, who stands in front of her lord Osiris. Here, she is the mistress, the keeper of the house of the dead. She is the widow. She is the mourning wife, the mourning daughter. And she brings about the great remover, reliever of grief. And behind her is Kebsenuf. And Kebsenuf often shows in the head of a falcon. The heads of the Canopic or the sons of Horus are often different. Apparently, various Egyptian dynasties put the different heads on the Canopic jars, different ones. And they sometimes, I believe, they forgot who was who. And so they just kind of mix them up. So we know that these spirit deities can change forms. And that's another thing that's wonderful about all these gods and goddesses. They're shapeshifters. They don't have a particular specific form. And I like that. Therefore, you can't say, well, this is always this. That's not true in Egyptian magic. What form you wish things to be, so shall it be. And when all these deities, north and south and east and west, fire and earth and air and water, join, again I will ring the bell. And as I will take up my staff, which I carved myself in 1973. It is made of crabapple wood. It is super hard, and it is in the shape of a serpent. As you know, a cobra in Egypt is a symbol of wisdom and protection. I wear on my finger always a silver cobra, who is the goddess Urea, and she is on all the pharaoh statues, on all the gods and goddesses statues. You will see in the middle of their forehead a cobra. She is there to protect all gods and goddesses and pharaohs, kings, queens, and the public. All wore cobras if they could. And so I raise my staff and I say, let there remain within this frame no adverse thought nor enmity, which is no negative energy. And I say, let all spirits who would do harm and all good spirits who are well-meaning but foolish remain outside this altar, this space. Let there remain within this frame no adverse thought, no enmity. Hear my will, I command of thee. For as my will, so must it be. And the entire group will then say, so must it be. And I say, then so it is so. And I know you can feel that energy right now, Hercules. I know you can feel the power of what I've said.
You're speaking very powerfully.
I am not a usual, silly, happy, funny.
I like the direction you're going.
I am Kamwes, the high priest. I am Kamwes, High Shemsu of the Niteru. This is who I am tonight. I am not a pharaoh, but I am the high priest. And as you know, in the hierarchy of the Egyptian civilization, their society, the high priest actually has more power than Pharaoh. Pharaoh comes to the high priest when something is wrong. Pharaoh asks decisions of the high lord, high priest. Many times in many dynasties, like for instance in the 18th dynasty, the great high priest and grand vizier, who is a past life of mine, is I-E-A-Y-I. He was the Henry Clay, as we would say, of high priest. He was high priest to and grand vizier to 4 pharaohs. I would say 5, but I don't count Akhenaten. I don't count Akhenaten for anything. In fact, I'm sure I was one of the people responsible for his murder. And I'm not apologizing for that. I find his energy repugnant. Anyone who would want to destroy all the beautiful things that happened in Egypt does not get my vote. That's all I can say on the subject of Akhenaten. Just keep it away from me. I put Tutankhamun on the throne and said, see here, you little bastard. We put up with your father's nonsense for 15 years, and we're not going to have any more. And Amun was put back on the throne as God, as high God. And if it wasn't going to work, if the gods didn't want that, Akhenaten's Aten would have been God, would have been Pharaoh ever since. And he's not. We know that for the next, 3,000 years, the Nitero came back. And it wasn't until the Romans came and kind of messed everything up. But they still followed the Egyptian lords and ladies and gods and goddesses. It wasn't until 700 A.D. that the last temple was closed. Now, I know that's a long time ago now, but think about it. They ruled all that time. And now, like in Greece, the Niteru are coming back. And I'm part of that. And I'm proud to say that I am part. And I'm proud to ask all of you, if you wish, if you believe in what I'm doing, and I ask you to please believe in what I'm doing, come and join us. Join us as part of the Temple Niteru. Join us as the temple we are putting together with this wonderful man here, Hercules. We are building a sanctuary for all the pantheons. in Hercules' name, in the Invictus name. We are putting together an amazing, amazing organization. Three different cultures coming together to bring the pagan energies back and make all that was removed and harmed open and beautiful again. And so now we come to the part of the ritual where I would, as high priest, bring the chalice to the high priestess and the chantress. My people have many different levels. There is the high priest and the high priestess, as in a pagan or Wiccan witch. I don't like the word Wiccan. Witch, coven or grove. We are a temple. We are a lodge. According to Murray Hope, the Egyptian lodge speaks of five officers, high priest, high priestess, scribes, those, et cetera, et cetera. I follow the ways of the temples in Thebes. I have high priests, period, plural, priestesses, plural, that follow the different godheads. So that I want an Isis, Nephthys, and Tehute, who the Greeks call Thoth or Hermes Trismegistus, to the not Hercules. And then also Ptah, Horus, certainly, and very much dear to my heart is the cat goddess Bast. If you were here right now, I have about a 17-inch goddess Bast overlooking my altar. I showed you the pictures, I think, Hercules, earlier.
Yes.
Isis, the Archangel Michael, who I'm named after. Michael is also Inset or Hapi, the god, the Egyptian son of Horus. They are both the same being. I think when the Hebrews left Egypt, they decided to call Hapi Mihael, who is like God, who. It's a threat. My name is a threat. It's a warning. Who are you, Jim Baker? Who are you, Oral Roberts? Who are you, you bunch of phonies? You're God? That's what it is. It's a warning to all false prophets that the Neteru will not tolerate that. And in the Hebrews took it and said their way. And I applaud them for using that energy to remove falsehood, to remove false prophets, people that would do harm for people in the name of money rather than in the name of the high spirits. We are priests and priestesses. My first duty is to serve the Neteru, follow them. I am here to serve God as you wish. Whatever form you think, I have taken the ancient Egyptian form. It is what came to me, and it is what breathes within my soul. If you feel something else, if you go to the energies of African gods and goddesses, Hebrew gods and goddesses, Persian, Greek, Roman, Norse, Druidic, you must follow these longings inside you. Because it is the high forces calling you to your duty, to answer your own heart, your own soul. And so what I do now, once I have established the circle, the square, protected the sacred space, is I reach out and we create a prayer, a particular one for Imbolc, for Candlemas, is to do with the Feast of Lights. So all of those, so many candles lit on the altar are to bring back the light in the darkness. Now, this is a very unusual winter, is it not, Hercules? We have not had, we haven't had the harsh colds. Well, they're coming, but the harsh snow and the, you know, dark, depressing. It was a beautiful day today. The dark, horrible days that usually hit in winter. We haven't had that yet. And so what this ritual is, and the pagans do the same, witches and other particular traditions, including the Greek, we bring the light back into the world. We're relighting the lamps, relighting the lanterns, the candles, the oil lamps, to bring light back in the middle of the, right smack in the middle of the dead of winter. There's a light, a warmth, and it is the light and spirit of the gods. And that's what we do, the reaffirmation. The Egyptians used to take coconuts and date seeds, grape seeds, wheat, corn, fish roe, I'm afraid. And this was an offering made this day, this time, to bring back the light. In my ancestors, who are the Druids, human sacrifice was done this day, as you know, in Stonehenge. Also, goats, ram, most of the time, a huge oxen. And the blood was stored and then was brought later dried as fertilizer for the crops. But also that day was blessed with by the high priestess and high priest with oils and mixed so that was made into an unguent, which was then applied to the forehead of all those that were in the ritual. And the people that were standing outside the circles were also blessed by the priests and priestesses. In the tradition of the Egyptians, like Easter for the Christians, palm fronds dried from the year before were made into ash, like Ash Wednesday, before that comes forward. There was also an unguent made of red ochre and henna, which was applied to the middle of the forehead. And the symbol for the sun was drawn, a circle with a dot in the middle of it. Here comes the sun. So we're bringing back the energy of the sun, of Heru, of Horus, of Ra, of Amun, back into the world, which is so weary of darkness. What I also see this as a reawakening of intelligence and warmth. I don't know if you've noticed it, Hercules, but this year of the rabbit, which is also in Egypt, the year of the cat, by the way, of Bath, which is what on my altar, and I have then done blessed her, is a much brighter, more positive, more loving, wonderful year. We have not had all the horrible things that have happened in years prior. I find this a better year already, a beginning of a better year. Aquarius, which is the what would you want to call it, age that we're in, to quote the old song. I now have the fifth dimension blasting in my head, and the cows and the cast of hair. Harmony and understanding, et cetera, et cetera. As we know from 2000 and 2002 and all those terrible, Aquarius was born in an air sign and born in chaos. And I think that we've had 20 years of horrible chaos, wars, pestilence, viruses, COVID-19 for one, starvation, mass shootings, murders, horrible, horrible things. And hopefully now this year of 2023, and if you think about that, 2 and 2 is 4 and 3 is 7. This is a year of 7. Should become a year of peace. And I'm praying for that. That's what I'm asking for. A year of peace, a year of harmony, of love, understanding, a year that will bring all of us closer together. I'm asking also that this be a year at the beginning of all the pantheons unite and help the world. I believe in a lot of ways that in the last 2,000 years, I can't imagine why, that the pantheons were asleep. They didn't do as much as they could have. They allowed monotheism in 3 or 4 different forms to kind of become the primary thing, and Saturn took a back seat to see how that was going to work. But it's time for us who follow many energies to wake up. And I'm a revolutionary. I'm not going to say I'm not. I'm named after a warrior angel, and he is charged. Here I come. And I'm the same way. I'm Michael. I'm not quiet. I talk too much. We've been told that all the time. But I also fight. If someone else needs me, I'm right there. When I was in high school, there were a bunch of kids that other kids made fun of. And because of my tarot cards and my sense of humor and the fact that I wouldn't take shit from anybody, I was popular. I still have a very large following. And if you go look at my Facebook, and yes, I'm on Facebook. If you look at my Facebook, almost all of my high school friends are still my friends. But there were people that people made fun of. There were people that were belittled and hurt. And those are the ones I took to my bosom. I said, come to me. Come help. Let me help you. Let me make you better about yourself. Because they were the ones that were, you know, the ones that hid in the corner, the wallflowers, the ones that didn't like themselves. They didn't know who they were. So I made them like themselves more. I made them laugh. I made them see that they were pretty or, you know, what was ever good in them. And that's what I'm praying this year will do. Take people under their wing. In my case, under the wings of Isis, my holy mother. And under the wings of Horus. Horus is a great falcon. And let him open his wings and warm you all with his solar energy. And Grandfather Ra, let him look down and be kindly to all of you and to speak to you all from his huge heart. The pantheons are here and they're ready. And I will teach anyone who needs the ways of the ancient peoples. My temple shall be called the Center for Ancient Learning, Ancient Knowledge. I have studied ancient histories, ancient religions, ancient traditions, my whole life. And this is my gift to all of you. It's what I've done all my life. And all the covens I've ever worked with will tell you, this is what I've done as a high priest, as a shepherd, to bring people to the ancient ways. And bring the ancient ways into the modern world. I don't want you all to throw on eyeliner unless you're into that sort of thing. Shave your heads and your whole bodies and throw on leopard skins and pleated gowns. First of all, this time of the year, it's pretty damn cold. But what I'm saying is this. We need to bring the energy back that will bring the love energy back into the world and not say, I hate you because you're different. And this is our prayer. Become one people, one nation in the universe, in peace and love, and so must it be. And that's what I would say to you in this prayer. And after I make the prayer, if anyone had something to say, each one of my membership will say something, a small prayer, and ask for, as you often do, Hercules, ask for health for someone. If someone needs a job, someone has become ill, someone has been hurt. What I love about Hercules, every day on his different boards, he will say, prayer is needed for this person or that person. My sister healed quickly because he had all these people praying for her. And again, Hercules, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for that.
Thank you for your kind words. My pleasure and my honor.
You are a being I wish I'd known my whole life. You have a name I knew all my life. You were someone I wish I had known as a child. We would be friends. We are friends, but we would have been friends even longer.
We're friends now, and that's what counts.
Yes, we are. And you mean the universe to me. I tell everyone that. If you're blushing, tough, deal with it. But
well,
I would end the ritual.
Thank you very much for your kind words. I think phenomenally highly of you as well. And I'm looking forward to these new adventures that we're starting tonight. You had mentioned organization. I hadn't really talked about that on the air yet. But I will say that one of the things that we're currently working on is a bunch of conversations between people who share certain aspects of spirituality to try to undo the curse of Babel. That's, of course, the Tower of Babel, where people had developed different languages and could no longer understand each other. So I feel at this point that increasing understanding between people who on the surface seem to have diametrically opposed views is very important. We live in a very polarized climate, so this is something to reduce the amount of polarization that we're experiencing. And I'm very honored that you're on board with that, and I'm really looking forward to this adventure setting up.
You're welcome. Now, after we've done this, we do a sacrifice. No, there's no virgins. Can you imagine in Manhattan looking for a virgin? Come on. We have cakes and ale as my pagan ancestors, my Norse and Druid and British ancestors did. I use cranberry juice. Some people can use wine. I don't drink alcohol, so I don't do that. And I take wonderfully made cakes. Today, I made a cinnamon raisin date nut cake, which I've cut up and I've offered. I offer to the gods and goddesses. Now, we have a thing called Heka, H-E-K-K-A, Heka, which is the magic that's brought down, but it's also the blessing of the wine, or the libation, as the Greeks often said, and the food, the bread. And we offer this to the deities, and then the high priest and high priestess will offer it to them, to the membership, so that they are, the energy is charged and blessed, and the essence is given to the high forces, which then you can feel the difference in that liquid or in that meal. They will eat that. We then will ask again if there is anything else that is needed to be said. Business, new business. This is part of a temple, after all, also. We talk about the coming events and what will be done. And then we close the ritual. Now, I know we've got a lot of time, Hercules, but I wanted to say that this is what I wanted to go with this. And then I want to get back into my own history again, if that's okay with you.
That is phenomenal. We have around 20 more minutes, and that would be great.
Yeah. So after the ritual is the old business, new business, what have you, we will then close the temple energy. We ask the lords and ladies, the great Niteru, one at a time, the candles will be extinguished in the north, in the east, in the south, and always finishing in the west, because that is where we die. And we've gone into the west, the land of the stone, and then that's closed. And we say that the altar is closed, the candles are snuffed out, a moment of silence and peace, as we are in a 21st century situation. Someone will then go, one of the lesser members, a lesser priest or priestess will go and turn the electric lights back on. And it knocks out all the spiritual energy and brings us back to normalcy. And then in my traditions, we split and we have a wonderful feast. Each one of us, it's kind of like what happens after on a Sunday, a church social. We then go downstairs and we have, you know, whatever goodies we've all brought out. We enjoy that. The Pernitero I had on Long Island, which was probably my most favorite temple that I'd ever created, we used to go to a restaurant called the Imperial Diner, which is on Merrick Road in Freeport, Long Island, every Monday. And they loved us because we spent a fortune. But we all had a grand old time. There was a camaraderie and a love and a brotherhood and sisterhood I have not ever experienced in any other group before. They were a wonderful group of people, and different things happened. People moved away. One person passed away, actually two passed, and the group disbanded for one reason or another. But that was a wonderful, we were about 10 years, and it was a wonderful, wonderful group. And that is what I'm hoping to bring forward now, with what I'm working on myself, with the sanctuary, the Pernitero's Center for Ancient Knowledge, and the temple school that I'm working on building right now, a training ground for scribes, high priests, high priestesses, priests, priestesses, and those who are also just called celebrants, who are people who want to just come and learn and contribute whatever it is they wish to contribute. And I welcome all. There have never been a time where I exclude people, except if their energy is negative. I have no time for that. I have no time for people who walk around hating other people. We're about love, brotherhood, and friendship. And we're also about unity, as I know you are, Hercules. And that's why we're together as friends.
Indeed, that is so.
Now, to go back to history. So, 7 years after I was initiated, both by my teacher and by my hereditary group in secret, I became aligned, well, about 4 years later, I was aligned with Olivia Robertson and the Fellowship of Isis, which was in Inniscorti at their temple, which was Clonangal Castle in Wexford in England, in Ireland. And I was made a high priest of Osiris and Isis, personally by Olivia Robertson and her brother, who lived for a little while longer. I was scared out of my mind. I'd never been to Ireland before. And they laid me down on a slab and blessed me with oils and unguents, and then they made me swear an oath, and I did. And I was given a bracelet, a ring, and a necklace, which are the three symbols of our group. And I brought that energy back with me to America. And then I was also, again, by my teacher on a beautiful, beautiful winter's night in 1977 at a very dear friend's house. We had another high priest elevation initiation, which he then installed me at in our Long Island coven as the high priest, the chief high priest. And from there on, things grew. And Viparna Teru grew. And I've been working since 1977 to bring back the energies. And I hate to use the word preach, but to speak my doctrine, speak the doctrine of the Pharaoh's people, Teru, of the gods and goddesses, if you wish, in English term, of the gods and goddesses, the pantheon of the Egyptians, which is my passion. So if anyone out there wants to learn and feels the same way I do and has that passion for those gods and goddesses, I'm here. I'm ready to teach you, and I welcome you. So must it be. Now, is there anything you need to ask or you want to ask, Hercules, about what I've said and what I've done?
No, it was very powerful. I have a sense now of your rituals and your mythology. And we all have a personal mythology that's fed by the collective unconsciousness, resonances with various periods in history. So I have a much better understanding of the things you've spoken of before. So I thought I understood all that you were telling me, but now I see that I was not. So I get a much better sense of who you are, where you come from, and where you're going. I'm really looking forward to starting on the projects that we've talked about. The next step is going to be to gather people who are not of the Nateru, not of the Olympians, but who follow other pantheons. And to give them a voice as well, just as you are in our group, the voice of Kemet. So we need the voices of others who honor the world of myth to have the conversations that we need to see how we can be of service to the world that we all share in here and now.
That's wonderful. I am so honored that you chose me to be part of this group. I can't even tell you the great... how much it takes my breath away. I've wanted to do this my whole life, and here you are, and you've made it happen. And God bless you, and Goddess bless you.
And God and Goddess bless you too. Are you familiar with theurgy?
Yes, I am.
We're starting to have these conversations under the umbrella of theurgy, because theurgy is something that all religions share. In a nutshell, for those who aren't familiar with theurgy, theurgy is the reaching up to the highest you can conceive, or the highest that you can resonate with, and then becoming a conduit for that energy or entity, you know, taking their energies and bringing them into our world and accomplishing things in this world, again, for the benefit of everybody. So we started the conversations with witches, and we leave the term loosely defined because so many different people are identifying with that term that sorting out the meaning of what they mean takes a little bit of time. But those conversations are starting this month toward the end of the month with Brandy Williams. And I've been focusing on the astral mythologies, or the astral or stellar or celestial mythologies, whatever you want to call them, that are usually thought of as UFO groups, UFO spiritualities. And although they're channeled fairly recently within the past century, they are speaking doctrines that are very ancient indeed, and whose existence can also be proven because the material from antiquity does exist, and it's very familiar to scholars. So the conversation is beginning with them at the end of this month or the beginning of next month. And once we can round up people of different, quote-unquote, pagan backgrounds, we can start having those conversations as well. So you've officially, by sharing some of the information we spoke of, you've officially cut the ribbon, so we can start moving ahead in that direction as well.
I hope I didn't do that in any way.
Well,
I did not know whether or not that the bast has gotten out of the bag, as it were. I wasn't sure. So forgive me for being a herald.
It's time. So thank you for being a herald in service to Hermes Trismegistus.
Who is someone I follow very, very closely, of course, being Ptolemaic myself. That's, you know, something we'll again talk about. My energies started in the Ptolemaic times, my own birth energies. I, you know, as a young man, that was the first. I studied Egyptology backwards. The Ptolemies came to me first. They were the last, and they came first. And then later, the Ramesside dynasty, and before that, the Thutmosis and Amenhotep, the 19th and 18th dynasties. And then later on, I learned about the primordial dynasties, and then Djoser, who is literally the scorpion king, who was the pharaoh of the fourth dynasty, who united Egypt together. He made Egypt Egypt, and he was a very, very violent being. Not very well loved, I understand, but he took Upper and Lower Egypt, Kenti Amenti, and made them one nation called Kemet, named Egypt. And for that, I'm grateful. It was his architect who built the first mustabas for him, to bury him. He lived a long time. For those years, I think he was 66. I'm 64. That doesn't make me feel too good. But they built him four or five different mastabas on top of each other, and that's where the first pyramid came from. And this man's name was Imhotep. Now, anybody that's watched the Mummy movies knows that name. But he was, the Greeks will get mad at me, he was the Hippocrates of Egypt. He was the father of Egyptian medicine. It was later that the Western scholars decided Hippocrates was the father of medicine. Guess what? Hippocrates studied in Alexandria with the medical people in Egypt. But because the West has a habit of thinking they did everything first, Hippocrates became the father, not Imhotep. And then later on, when they discovered workers on the pyramids that had been fixed, their brain, maybe they had a fracture in their arm, or their neck or their legs, or they had teeth problems. They found gold, and they found bones that were healed, which nobody thought anybody in that time could do. They found out that this Imhotep, and they found his scrolls and stelae and stone about how to set a bone, how to work on opening a skull and finding maladies in the brain, how to do dentistry. All these things this man knew how to do. He's marvelous, marvelous creature. And so they learned that he was truly the beginning surgeon, the beginning doctor, not only using herbs, but also drills and saws and things, scalpels. This man knew how to do these things thousands of years before Hippocrates. And it was because he studied in the library at Alexandria in that time that he became this amazing, knowledgeable Greek. And I honor him, too, because he took Egyptian knowledge and brought it to the world. Oh, in his own name, yes, but still, it was the knowledge he learned in Alexandria. And for that, I'm grateful.
Yeah, Herodotus acknowledges, as do many other ancient writers, the debt that the Greeks owe to Kemet. And even Solon, who is said to be one of the wisest among the Greeks, he was told by the Egyptian priests that the Greeks are like children. They know nothing of the true history of humanity. I'm Greek. We did invent everything, so that's the line, and I'll stick to it. But there's historical.
But you certainly all have a word for this, going this, to the my big fat Greek wedding thing. Well, the Greeks have a word for everything, and it all starts in Greece, right?
Of course. but we acknowledge that there's archaeological evidence that contradicts some of what we say.
I don't care. I find Greek culture very lovable and fun, and your food is delicious. And I have many, many, many other Greek friends. So I fell in love with your culture too. I don't hold that against you. It's a cool thing.
I'll reveal a great secret here on your show. Very few Greeks actually break plates for real, but people expect us to break plates, so we indulge them at times.
that if you've watched Zorba the Greek or my big fat Greek wedding or so many other fake things, yeah, hopa, smash, you know. I don't know why anybody would want to go around doing that. And then some poor slob has to sweep it all up, right? It's a mess.
and again, there are some traditions that call for the breaking plates. Even in the Hebraic tradition, there's like breaking of cups and plates, you know, during some ceremonies like marriage. But the
right,
very
they break towers. These days, my Jewish friends tell me that in the cloth is a light bulb.
Ah, okay.
Well, because a lot of the grooms weren't able to break the glass, and that's bad luck, so they use a light bulb. Taught you some more things about my culture and what I expect and what I do so that we can now make that happen.
Indeed you have. I learned a lot during this episode, and I'm looking forward to the future. This is going to be an exciting, interesting, and necessary adventure. So we're off on the right foot, or we started on the right foot, rather, and we're off to a good start.
So must it be, then. I'm so delighted. Running out of time here, too, Guy.
Yes. Now, how can people contact you and learn more about what you shared tonight?
Please contact me by my phone number, which is 516-650-3691. You can text me or you can call me. If you do either, please identify yourself. Say I am ... and I heard you on ComWest Speaks on Sages and Seers. You can reach me at my Facebook page, which is Michael K. Waterman at Facebook.com, of course. You can get me on my email, which is mkwaterman at Facebook, at iCloud.com. I have to be a cloud, right? That's going to happen. I'm on the cloud. What can I tell you? You can reach me, of course, through my dear friend Hercules and his various things. And I am also on Instagram. Look up Michael K. Waterman. You'll see all those things. Instagram, Twitter. I don't know if anybody uses that anymore. And also Indeed or LinkedIn. I'm on all of those things. You can find me on all of those things. Look up my name and you'll find me. You can also Google me. Michael K. Waterman, Google. Okay? Is there anything else you want to add, Hercules?
No, if you could just leave, we have around 3 more minutes left. If you could just leave everybody, if they're considering exploring the Kemetic path, if you could leave them with a thought or something to meditate on, that would be great.
I want you to all close your eyes and think of the words life, health, and prosperity. And those are Ankh, Ujjat, Saneb, life, health, and prosperity. And those are the greetings I always give everyone and also how I part. Life, health, and prosperity. Ankh, Ujjat, Saneb. And blessings to you all.
And blessings to you as well. Excellent, excellent, excellent show. And I'm looking forward to the next one already. And thanks to everybody who joined us tonight. And thanks to everybody who clicked on a link and found themselves here from Facebook or other places where we promote the show. And I hope that some of you will be listening to the show later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And thank you once again, Setna Come West.
My pleasure. Thank you. Blessings. Thank you so much.
Good night, everybody.